Good morning, everyone, and welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That is Nick Wright. We are joined this morning by Amani Toomer and Eric Mangini.
Good morning, Eric.
Nice to see you. Oh, we have got a tremendous show for you today, as evidenced by our cast right here. Brady's rumored demands.
They'd be here even if the show stunk. But
that is true.
But we do happen to have a great show today.
That is very true. We'll talk about LeBron's insane night last night, the big NBA trade, but we are going to begin this morning with the Super Bowl champs.
Who are they, Jenna Wolf?
Oh, it is the KC Chiefs.
Oh, okay.
It has been quite a week for Patrick Mahomes, fresh off another incredible season, fresh off a Super Bowl win and a Super Bowl MVP. The talk in KC went from when will the Chiefs win to how many more will the Chiefs win? Most of that because a number 15 who's already cemented himself as one of the best players in franchise history. And thankfully for the Chiefs, he doesn't want to go anywhere else.
Obviously, I want to be in Kansas City for a long time. I understand that. I also want to win a lot of football games here. And so for me, it's kind of letting that stuff handle itself. I'm in a great organization. I have a great team of guys working for me, guys and girls. And so for me, it's about trusting those people, finding the best way to do it in order to have the best team around me, and getting that done whenever the time is right.
They have barely had time to let all the confetti fully fall, and we are talking about what we're going to do with Patrick Mahomes in the years to come. The number is around $40
million. Yep.
What do you think, Nick? Would Mahomes be worth a record-setting deal of $40 million per?
Of course. If he's not worth it, nobody is. He is the exact type of player at the exact position that is worth all the money. That whatever the market price is for the best quarterback in football, add 10 to 15% to it, and that's what Patrick Mahomes is clearly and obviously worth, and he showed it this year. Now, the sticker shock is going to be $40 million, so 40 times 5, we can do that math, $200 million.
I can
talking
do that
about,
math.
Yeah, $140 million, maybe $150 million guaranteed. But you can't look at it as $40 million. You've got to look at it as 10 to 12 million because that's the spread between what Mahomes will cost and what the going rate is for just average quarterback play. So the example I was thinking of is you go to a steakhouse. Coach took me out to a very nice lunch not very long ago. The steak I wanted, coincidentally, on the bone Kansas City Strip. You see it, it's $71. It's an enormous amount of money for a steak or anything. But the cheapest steak on the menu was $52. So you're anchored at $52. It's really, is it worth the extra $19? In the NFL right now, you're anchored at $28 million. Kirk Cousins cost you $28 million. Jimmy Garoppolo cost you $28 million. So is Patrick Mahomes worth the extra $12? Would you rather have Kirk Cousins and a really good right guard? Would you rather have Jimmy Garoppolo and a solid number two corner? Or Patrick Mahomes and figure the other position out. That's what it is. Because it's not a difference of 0 to 40. It's 28 to 40. So to me, Coach, he is unequivocally, unquestionably worth it. In a world where Russell's at 35 and Aaron's at 36, of course Patrick is worth 40.
You know, unlike with Nick's finances, the Kansas City Chiefs have a salary cap, so you can only go to so many of those steak lunches before you're headed to McDonald's. So there's got to be that balance there, and you're trying to make sure that you have the right mix. Now, I do agree in the sense that you have a young player at the greatest position team.
Yep.
Arguably the best player at that position in the league, and more important to me is he's a good person. And one of the things that you try to do organizationally is not just pay your best players, but you want to pay your best people. You want to send a message to the rest of the team that we not only value what he does as a player, but we value what he does as a person and what his contributions are to the team from that standpoint. And to me, this is a unique opportunity to do that. And $40 million, it may seem like sticker shock, but it'll only seem like sticker shock till the next deal, which will trump his $40 million.
Which will probably be soon, in a couple of years.
Anyway. I think Aaron Rodgers at 34, so $6 million more a couple years later, it really is. It's a rounding error.
It's about what you would expect it to
be. Yeah, and he's earned it, and they have the potential every year to be in a position to compete for a championship, and you're paying a really good person. To me, that's money well spent, and you understand some of the things, the sacrifices you may have to make at some point, But that's okay because he makes you so much better in so many other areas.
Absolutely right. I think he is the right type of person. And I know all the other quarterbacks in the league are saying, go ahead, get the money, get the money. Because all that does is drive up the price of a quarterback the next time go around. I remember you're talking about sticker shock. Remember when Drew Bledsoe had that first $100 million contract? That was, everybody was surprised, but then it became the norm. And now it just keeps on. That's just the evolution of sports, the evolution of the economics of sports. Now, you can go the total wrong direction, is which the Saints did. When they paid all that money to Drew Brees, and for a couple of seasons there, there was a talent deficiency because all the money was going towards Drew Brees, and they couldn't sign their Pro Bowl tackle, that guard that they had. And so that's what you don't want to have happen. But when you look at Patrick Mahomes, he's the right guy. He's young. He has a lot of years left. You know, you can keep throwing money down the road in terms of, you know, keep extending him, and so that he'll never actually be a free agent, and he'll have opportunity to play for the Chiefs for a long time. And there's no reason why he shouldn't. And with him saying that he's going to play for the Chiefs for a long time, he wants that long-term deal, yeah, to get that guaranteed money.
$40 million for Patrick Mahomes doesn't seem like a ton when we're talking that Dak Prescott wants somewhere between 30, 32, 35, or whatever it may be. But Coach talks a lot about a force multiplier, and usually talk about that in reference to a guy on the team making the guys around you better. But with Patrick Mahomes, as you said, he makes the whole team better on and off the field with his leadership and his poise and all of this at age 24. But Imani brings up a good point. When you pay someone like Patrick Mahomes that kind of money, is it going to leave holes on the rest of the roster?
Listen, you're going to have to draft incredibly well.
Absolutely.
You're going to have to absolutely. They haven't had Brett Veach, their star GM, who, by the way, everyone should read. Kevin Clark did an interview with Brett Veach back in August where he talks about they've been preparing for this moment since after Mahomes' rookie season when he played one game, trying to schedule, kind of slot their contracts where they will have a hole in the cap that will be filled by the 35 plus million they anticipate giving Patrick. But Brett Veach never had a first round pick. They traded a first round pick away to be able to get Patrick. They traded another one away to be able to get Frank Clark. But he's hit on his second rounders. Mecole Hardman, I think, is a good pick. Juan Thornhill was one of their better defensive players before he went down with an injury in week 17. But there is going to be a narrative, and it's going to be a wildly unfair narrative, that Patrick should do what Brady did and that Patrick should take less to help the team. The history on Tom Brady doing that is incredibly inaccurate the way it's been portrayed. Tom, the first decade of his career, kept getting paid super early. He was a sixth round pick. After he wins the Super Bowl, he has at that point in his career made $480,000, and he has 1 year left at $385,000 and then restricted free agency. So they got him below market because they paid him 2 years early, but that was a below market deal. He then wins two more Super Bowls, but has 2 years left on his contract. They pay him early again, so they get a discount. That's how it works in business. Is it? Go ahead, Coach.
I love the way that you talk about Tom Brady's contract. When he gets paid early, you take a discount. Usually when we're talking about any other player that we pay early, you're like, pay a market value. It's 6 years early.
No,
pay a market value.
No.
He's unhappy. He's unhappy.
No.
He doesn't want to be unhappy.
What I'm saying
is... But for Tom, it's like,
of course that's not what I'm saying about Tom. What I'm saying is, in negotiation, the closer the employee is willing to get to the end of the contract, take on more risk, the more money they usually get. The earlier they sign the extension, they usually take security over maximizing their dollars. There's been one time in Brady's career he has pushed it close to the brink prior to this year. And guess what happened in 2010 when he did that? He became the highest paid player in the NFL. People act like that didn't happen. In 2010, look it up. Tom Brady, $28 million per year. The next highest was Peyton Manning at $27.5 million. So the one time he pushed it...
Well, he really pushed the envelope there.
No. He deserved it.
$500,000.
No. I'm not saying that. My point is...
That's crazy.
The reason that Imani said other players are rooting for Patrick is because when a player does do what Brady did post 2010, which is take discounts, then teams can pressure players. You know what Tom did? He's the GOAT. He played for $14 million. And that's unfair. The owners locked the players out to keep the salary cap as low as possible, and then on the back end say, well, the salary cap's not high enough, take less money. Patrick should take every dollar he can get. Absolutely. He's earned it.
Nick, there is a reality. Like, it's not an unlimited amount of cash flow, so the more of the pie that you take, the less there is for other people. And at some point, how much money is enough? And is it better to win and get the other things associated with winning? Or is it better for you to get every single dollar you can?
Capitalism.
I don't begrudge him from getting that money. But there's a reality that comes with it. And so you can't be mad if the team's not improving, but yet I'm taking every last cent I can get.
I agree. But we also have a new CBA that the owners and players are hammering out as we speak. Mm-hmm. And if we're going to put pressure on players to take less to help the team, I'm sure every player in that room would say, hey, just give us a couple more percentage of the revenue. Salary cap will jump to $240 million, and nobody will have this question again. So we can't just say it's on to the players to take less to help the team win, when the owners, through the stroke of a pen, could say salary cap's $250 million. Yeah. You can pay everybody. That's the unfairness I see in that, at least, discussion point.
To Tom Brady now, a free agent for the first time in his career, as many accolades on his resume as rumors about his future. This latest one, that he's demanding $30 million to return to the Patriots, that one seems to be false. We're hearing now that adding weapons is actually a priority for Tom Brady. His teammate Julian Edelman tweeting to Brady yesterday, baby comeback.
Oh, that's great. That's from a movie from your era, Jenna.
It's my Say Anything.
Say Anything.
I don't want to buy anything bought or sold. I don't want to sell anything. I won't do all the lines.
Thanks.
I can, but I can if I had to. Uh-huh. Nick, is the Patriots Super Bowl window still open if Brady takes a hometown discount again?
I don't feel it is. Let's just say he takes the amount of money he took last year. Maybe let's just say he takes $3 million less than he had last year. So you can add a player in the margins. I think 14 was 2 years ago.
Okay.
Last year he got a bump up. He got, I think it was $23 million. So let's say he takes $20 million, which is under Joe Flacco. We're talking now in the Case Keenum area. It would be a massive discount for a player of his stature, even if it's about on par with a player of his ability at age 43. And the Patriots were not a good team against good teams last year. And next year, they don't have the scheduling gods touching them on the head with the 32nd ranked schedule. Next year, instead of the NFC East, the worst division, one of the worst divisions in NFL history last season, they get the NFC West, what we think is one of the better divisions in football. Now, I know that's projecting, but San Francisco's not going anywhere. Seattle's still got Russell Wilson. I know some people are higher on the Rams than me, and the Cardinals seem to have a quarterback. I think the NFC West is the most complete division. So they swap out the East for the West. They once again have a first-place schedule, of course. So they play Baltimore and Houston to go along with everyone in the AFC West, Kansas City most notably. Where are you going to make up the ground where you were dominated by Baltimore, dominated by Houston, beat by Kansas City, beat by Tennessee, escaped twice against Buffalo, and escaped against Philly? Those are your games against playoff teams. So with or without a league average quarterback at a discount, do I think they're contenders? No, I think the Patriots, they're not in rebuild mode, but I do think they are in retooling mode next year around figuring out what their offense can do, what their offensive line is going to look like since the departure of Dante Scarnecchia, and what it is on the offensive side of the ball they do great. I think that's what they're going to be figuring out next season.
I don't forget how good the Patriots were midway through the season when they had AB and they had Josh Gordon. I mean, this is a team, but when they have weapons, Tom Brady is able to be the Tom Brady that he was in the past. So I think that this seems more consistent with his whole career path in terms of how he approaches the economy of the game, where he takes less money to make sure that his team is complete. So this seems more consistent with what he is. But I think $30 million is a pay cut in terms of what he could ask for if he wanted to make every last dollar he probably
could. Yeah, the Chargers might pay him more for his name on the marquee. And so he might be taking, not maximizing his full value financially by staying with New England.
One of the hardest things as a coach, especially after you've had a successful season, is explaining to your players and getting them to understand that you don't get to start where you left off the previous season.
Very true.
And you have to start over. And when you've been successful, you've got to do all the things that made you successful, but you've got to do it better because everybody's chasing you. And there is this thing that I've said over and over again. You go into a season with who you think you are, and then you realize who you need to be, and the good teams are able to make that adjustment. Now, the one thing that New England has done consistently is start over. And they've been able to look at their strengths, their weaknesses, and try to fill those voids and do that through a combination of free agency and the draft. And for people to doubt their ability to do that after year in and year out of having success and to place Tom Brady in the category of quarterbacks, so you're placing him.
That was just, no, Coach, that I mean, was salary. It's yeah. That was, I wasn't saying he's Flacco and Keenum. I'm saying that's what those guys make.
Yeah,
I wasn't.
Well, $30 million is good value for him for a lot of reasons. I would probably take $2 to $5 million of that and try to go get Dante to come back out of retirement. I think that could be the money that's well spent, no matter what you're going to spend on all the other guys. But he does have Josh McDaniels back, and there is an ability organizationally to recalibrate, to reload, and to fix the mistakes that you've made and to fill those gaps that other organizations have not shown the ability to do.
It just has the feeling, and their defense played great by all standards. Forget who they played last year. Their defense was a top-ranked defense. But that on offense, all they seem to have or all we seem to talk about is Tom Brady, however you think he's ready or capable of playing going into this year, and Josh McDaniels and Bill Belichick. How much, I don't remember a season where they're going into, I know you say they're going to recalibrate, they're going to start fresh, and they always find a way to make it work. It seems like they have more holes on offense going into this coming season than they have in years past.
They don't have a great quarterback anymore. They have a quarterback who's the greatest ever, who's no longer great. The last time the Patriots won a playoff game without a great quarterback was the 0-1 Super Bowl against the Rams. Brady was great starting in 0-3. Look at the numbers. Starting in 0-3. 0-2, they missed the playoffs. He actually led the league in touchdown passes in 0-2, by the way. But you guys missed the playoffs. And by 0-3, he might not have been league MVP great, but he was one of the six or seven best quarterbacks in football already. In 2008, they didn't have a great quarterback. They had a fine quarterback. And despite having all those weapons, they missed the playoffs with Matt Castle. Mm-hmm. Last year, they did not have a great quarterback. And despite the soft schedule and the great defense, they don't win a playoff game.
What do you think that Tom Brady isn't doing great anymore? Well, what decline in his skill set do you see? As you watch his game, what do you see that he's not doing great? Well, what's changed?
I don't mean to do this to you, but how about everything? How about let's just show it as best as we can what Tom Brady's last 4 years have looked like. Coach, you're in the market. You buying that stock? That's completion percentage, yards per game, yards per pass, and passer rating over
the
last 4 years.
It's so funny. I was just listening to someone talk about stock and saying that you should buy it when people are most pessimistic.
Right.
Not when they're most optimistic, because that's where you have a chance to become really wealthy.
Absolutely. And I tried that once with Blockbuster.
I'm buying
Blockbuster. And then they delisted.
Oh, wow.
I mean, that's fine. But the answer is every single quarterback indicator, it's like this over the last 4 years. Started at a very high place.
But when you look at it, think about the amount of times he was pressured this year. Mm-hmm. Think about the amount of times he was quickly pressured. Think about the inability for them to run the ball effectively, the injuries that they had, whether it was at left tackle, center, fullback, transitioning at tight end. Mm-hmm. There was a volume of things that changed dramatically. But yet they still went 12-4, they still won the division, and they still were a significant threat going into the playoffs.
I mean, you act like this team is not, they didn't almost have the number one seed. You know, this is a team that's played a lot of football. And the fact that, you know, Tom Brady didn't look at his greatest in the last game, I think it's more a function of the team and how they, you know, I think they're still haven't got over the fact that Gronkowski left unexpectedly. So I think that this is a team that, just like Coach says, they can retool and they find a way to reinvent themselves. They're more honest with themselves than any other team when they're approaching the offseason. So I would not count this team out, and I would not count out Tom Brady.
Can they still win, getting back to our original question, do you think they could still win a Super Bowl the way they're constructed now if Tom Brady returns? A Super Bowl.
Halfway through the year, everybody was saying, myself included, that they were going to win the Super Bowl again. So I think that just because the season tailed out towards the end because of some injuries and because of, you know, losing Josh Gordon and Antonio Brown not being there, being available, I think those two things were major factors in why, you know, they weren't able to stretch the field. They weren't able to run their offense the way that, you know, they had planned on when they acquired acquired these two talented young receivers.
And look at the 49ers. And I love this. They went from coaching the Senior Bowl to coaching the Super Bowl. So the idea of being able to go from a underachieving team to a Super Bowl team, it happens. It happens more often than we give it credit. So to go from 12-4 to winning the Super Bowl, yeah, I think that's a pretty reasonable jump.
4-5 in their final nine. Their wins over playoff teams came against the Bills in one score games and the Eagles.
This is the guy who bought Blockbuster.
Okay, well,
Nick's not convinced.
Take whatever you want from that.
Nick's not convinced.
Macy's is.
To the much-anticipated matchup of the young NBA one-named superstars, Giannis and Zion facing off for the first time in their careers, and Giannis got the best of this matchup. Zion scored 20 points, but he did shoot just 26%, his worst in his young career, while Giannis finished with 34, led his team to a 12-point win. Here is Giannis Antetokounmpo after the game.
First time going against Zion, what did you think about the matchup on both ends of the court?
Great. Gonna be a really good player for a lot of years to come. He's out there helping the team. He's competing as hard as possible. You just gotta stay healthy and you're gonna have a bright future.
He's the former MVP. I mean, it's like going up against any great player. Like, do as much as you can to slow him down.
He's his own player. He brings his own style to the game. That's why he's Giannis. But when I'm out there, I don't think about stuff like that. I think about just trying to create for myself and create for my teammates to try to get the win.
Vinny, I'll start with you. What do you make of Zion really having his first bad game as a pro?
9 months ago, he was at Duke. That's what I'm thinking. I think sometimes we put the cart ahead of the horse in a lot of different ways. And this guy's played his sixth game. Like, he is still getting his feet wet in terms of NBA basketball. And you're playing against the best team in the league that can win 70 games. If that's not a recipe for having your first bad game, I'm not sure what is. And if there's a player that physically can give him problems from an athletic standpoint, Giannis, from a limb standpoint, it's going to be Giannis, because the quickness is there and he's bigger, longer, faster, stronger, and a little more mature, you know, and knows how to work the angles on the floor. And you saw it a couple times. There was a couple of, you know, welcome to the NBA moves, young fella, from Giannis to Zion, which usually happens. I'm not surprised that last night. I don't think that's a demerit on anything that Zion has accomplished so far.
And I don't know if Giannis is stronger, and I'm not even certain if he's faster.
He's got grown man strength.
Sure, and he's so much longer. I mean, Giannis is a freak show. Giannis was about Zion's height when he was drafted, and then he just grew an extra 6 inches his first few years in Milwaukee. This matters nothing to me as far as Zion's future. It's not just that they're the best team in basketball in Milwaukee. They are the best defense by a wide margin, and they are a defense most perfectly set up to stop Zion's game, because everything right now Zion does is at the rim. That first game he played, he hit those four threes. He hadn't hit one since. Like, we know that is going to be a work in progress for him. And Brook Lopez, the Brook Lopez 4.0 version that Milwaukee has gotten, has turned into a spectacular rim defender. Giannis might be the best defensive player in basketball, to your point about the length and the quickness, all of that. Like, going into the game, he had taken 60 shots at the rim. He had made 40 of them. That's 67%. Last night, he took 15 shots at the rim. He made 5 of them. And he had 4 long arms meeting him most plays, 2 long arms meeting him some plays. Listen, Zion is not yet one of the 10 best players in basketball. He's already one of the 50 best players in basketball. To me, there's no doubt about that, and you could probably tick that higher. But this is the toughest matchup for any guy of his skill set in the league, because they don't allow points at the rim, and that is right now the only place he's comfortable scoring. And you saw it. I mean, how many arms are meeting him every time he goes? So I'm not – listen, all that, anyone that wants to sell any Zion stock, anyone that, as they were saying before, and I love Ja, wants to trade Ja stock for Zion stock, I'll take the Zion stock. He is going to be a super duper star in this league. Milwaukee is the best regular season team in the league by a wide margin.
And what does it say, Vinny, that his floor, maybe you saw his floor last night, is still that high compared to other guys who were 6 games into their career?
I think you're saying you might be selling him short. Like, I think he's going to be a top-level player next year. Just from what you've seen in a very small sample size in terms of his adjustment to the game, in terms of how well he handles his body. Like, everybody talks about, well, he's 6'6", he's 285. Yeah, he's always been 6'6", 285. Like, you know how to negotiate your body around the rim. Just because we're seeing it for the first time and the league is seeing it for the first time, his quickness around the rim, his second jump is something that if you're playing small ball center, which is essentially what he's playing, that's tougher for so many other teams to combat in terms of giving somebody with the quickness to defend him and getting someone with the athleticism to handle him. So I wouldn't be shocked if we're talking about an all-star player next season.
And by the way, if people didn't watch the game, the Pelicans had lead at halftime. It was the third quarter the game totally got away from them. They lost the game by 12, lost third quarter by 18 points. And so Zion, I think, only took one field goal to third quarter. It's a bad third quarter for them in a game he struggled overall. But the Pelicans, all things considered, honestly, acquitted themselves somewhat well against the best team in basketball.
All right, on to the other big game last night. Lakers hosting the Spurs, and LeBron put on a vintage performance, dropping 36-9 in a blowout win. 19 of LeBron's points came in the fourth, where he went 5 for 5 from three, each shot seemingly harder than the last, prompting Greg Popovich to say after the game, make sure you get good pictures. More now from LeBron's teammate, Anthony Davis.
It's always fun to watch him, and you know, we were all excited. We were all, you know, saying heat check, you know, give him the ball, and he was looking for it. And you know, guys were, you know, looking for him, the guy that was on the floor. And he was able to make five, and you know, the timeout happened, and it wasn't even planned. We all just, you know, took off and ran over there and just, you know, kind of just jumped on him. So moments like that is why, you know, we are the way we are.
And it's moments like that that make you fall in love with watching LeBron do what he does this deep into his career. Is LeBron, Nick, proving that he is still the best player in the NBA in year 17, despite
his... Well, the guy we just talked about, Giannis, is going to win the MVP, and if the vote was today, Vinny has a vote. I horrifically do not. But it would be...
Thankfully, do
it
not.
It would be unanimous, I think. I think Giannis would be unanimous MVP, and throughout the course of an 82-game regular season, I think Giannis is the guy you would want because he is so much younger. He does so many more. He does everything except for shoot the three at a super high level. But if you define best player by who would every GM, whether they want to admit it or not, want to have still come playoffs, of course it's LeBron. In the regular season, he's the second or third best player in basketball. We were talking about MVP voting. He right now would be second or third on most people's ballots up to this point. But there is not another guy in the league, Giannis included, until Giannis shows it to us, and I think maybe he will as soon as this year, that he can do it in four consecutive rounds. There's not another player in basketball you'd want over this guy. And that is, to me, inarguable. I don't know if you agree or not. If you don't, I'm very curious who you would say, because what he does every single night is find exactly what his team needs to put them in the best position to win, if it's defer, if it's attack, if it's lock in defensively, and he is showing no letdown in year 17 after his first year with a significant injury.
I think that what you're saying, in theory, is correct as far as him being the ultimate Swiss Army knife. Like, he can assess whatever the situation is and be able to, in his computerized brain, you know, be able to give you what you need by and large. And on a given night, I think he can be the best player in basketball. Every night, I can't say that in year 17, A, there's no precedent for it. You know, Michael, Magic, Bird were all gone. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar had already started the steep decline and had Magic Johnson there.
Karl Malone was excellent, and Kobe was very good until he popped his Achilles. Those are the only guys in year 17 who've done anything close to what LeBron's doing.
I will take umbrage with you even bringing Karl Malone into this conversation.
Okay, don't, fair. Don't, we don't have to get have a Karl Malone debate.
Don't we have to do that. But what I will say is this. If there's a game, I may take LeBron. If it's a playoff series, and I think that's a completely different conversation, there's a couple players that I may take above him, including your guy Kawhi. Just because he brings it on, just because he brings it on both ends.
There are
two totally different players.
He doesn't guard the other team's best player anymore. He stands in the corner. I watched him play the Rockets. He's in the corner on PJ Tucker. He's not guarding James Harden. Come on, hold on. What Kawhi are we talking about now? The Kawhi that has to do everything for the Clippers offensively has done it and has been exceptional. He occasionally will guard the other team's best player. He ain't locking down the other team's best player. That's not his job there. That's not what they've asked him to do there.
Well, here's what I'm saying, Nick, and here's the thing. It's not smart to have your best player who's carrying the load do that, but the fact that you can stick Kawhi on another team's best player and he puts him on punishment, to me, that's something that LeBron
can do that?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
Not at this stage of his career anymore. I think that's too much to ask. LeBron is not Superman. He's not this, like, unbreakable figure. When LeBron was in Miami, if we're talking about 2013 LeBron, absolutely. That might be the best player I've ever seen, sans Michael Jordan. But year 17, LeBron,
level defensive player. You think the Western Conference Finals are going to be Clippers-Lakers, right?
Yes.
So if before the finals, the Clippers and Lakers flip-flopped LeBron for Kawhi, you think the Lakers would be better and the Clippers would be worse? Do you think that? Because that's a series.
No, I don't think that, because the Lakers are built around LeBron and the Clippers are built around what Kawhi will be available to do.
Both teams kind of built on the fly, but okay, sure.
But you're building a team around what you expect the best of Kawhi and LeBron.
So you'd rather have Kawhi in a playoff series than LeBron?
At this stage?
Okay.
At this stage?
That's fascinating.
Can I ask you guys a question? Could the Lakers win if LeBron is the best player on the team, or would they need Anthony Davis, do you think, at the end?
No, LeBron has to be the best player. Anthony Davis has to be a way overqualified Robin in a playoff series until we see Anthony do it. We've got to see Anthony do it in a playoff series. He's got to be like LeBron. The Lakers' path to a championship, it's simple, but it's hard. LeBron has to be the best player in the postseason, as he's been every year for the last 9. The best player in the postseason. And while you're falling all over yourself about what Kawhi did last postseason, I am old enough to remember the last postseason LeBron played in, when he averaged 34-9-9, hit 2 game-winning shots, had a 45-point game 7, had a 36-15-9 game 7, and had a 51-8-8 against KD and the Warriors. A healthy KD and the Warriors, by the way, which of course Kawhi didn't have to go against. But that's cool. I'm excited that you'll take Kawhi. I think it's a really fascinating take.
A lot can change in 2 years.
Yeah. Let's see it.
He grew hair. I mean, look at that.
Let's see it.
I mean, he's not believing in what Kawhi did last year.
I am believing in
it. We got to take a break.
One of the 6 best players in the world. There ain't no shame in that.
Sticking with the NBA now.
Long absence.
And just when you thought the Rockets couldn't pull off a 14-12-player trade, Vinny, the Rockets did just that. Trading away starting center Clint Capella to Atlanta, they get Robert Covington from the T-Wolves in return. Biggest NBA deal since the Knicks traded Patrick Ewing to Seattle back in 2000. Nick, did the Rockets improve their title chances with this move?
You know, it's really, really tough, because you don't know what you're going to get from Clint Capella. Dealing with this foot injury and the plantar fascia, and there was real concern. They said he's not going to be back till the All-Star break, but I think there's real concern that you weren't going to get 100% Clint Capella all year long. The Rockets are now, they are further pushing all in on a small ball, who gives a damn about rebounding. We're going to shoot 55 threes a game. Now, I do think they got better on the perimeter defensively. I know Rocco's been down for maybe a year and a half, but I think he has shown the ability to be the traditional 3-and-D player, one of the few pieces of the process in Philly that it's like, oh, wait, we actually found a real live NBA player there, and his contract's a good value. But when I look at what you have to get through in the Western Conference, I would have liked to keep Clint Capella. I said to you yesterday, the Rockets, what they know more so than almost any other team out West is they've got a starting five who has been there that they believe in. And I know people crush them because they couldn't get past KD and the Warriors. But when you have Russ, Harden, Eric Gordon, PJ Tucker, Clint Capella, those are all B-level players or above at what they do. And in the West these days, with Jokic, with Anthony Davis, it won't hurt you against the Clippers, I suppose, because they don't have a true big man that you go to. But the Rockets are going to place everyone 6'6 or below. It is a fascinating attempt at winning a championship, and it's unprecedented in modern NBA history to play a team as small as they're going to play.
That was a very long-winded way for Nick to say that he does not want to insult his buddy Daryl Morey and say that Daryl did something that makes absolutely no sense.
So you hate the trade?
It's not hate the trade because I didn't think they are any closer to winning the championship than they were before, because I didn't think they were closer to winning the championship.
Did they get further away?
Farther, yeah, I think they do. Because here's the thing. You have championship teams have to win more than one way. Golden State, for all of their three-point shooting and everything else, they were the best defensive team in basketball, and they could play so many different ways with different lineups that you couldn't prepare for them. It just looked pretty with Steph and Klay, and even later when KD got there. It's a completely different game for Houston. Their perimeter defense has gotten better, but I'm not going to call James Harden or Russ plus defenders perimeter-wise. James Harden's an underrated
post defender. He's a great post defender.
But how many guards are going to be posting you up in the postseason when it counts?
Well, at this point, he might be the power forward for the team. So it might help him in that regard.
And my thing is, rebounding matters. Shot blocking matters.
Rim protection matters.
Nick, a couple of segments ago and yesterday, railed on me about the Clippers not having a rim protector.
100% agree.
And the Rockets have no one. And you can talk about P.J. Tucker being your best defender and putting him everywhere. You're going to wear that man out.
You're right.
And the reason that Golden State's depth lineup worked with Draymond Green, Iguodala,
Draymond could rim protect.
He could rim protect, but B, you could do it in small doses. You did not have to play that for 36 to 38 minutes a night. Houston's going all in on a lineup that has a very short shelf life.
But Nick, you're an analytics guy. And when I first read this, I was like, oh, small ball. Nick's not going to But I think there's a part of you that is looking forward to seeing how Daryl Morey is putting this team together, how they're going to do something different like they did before, and say maybe the three is going to end up taking us further.
Nobody's more of an analytics guy than Daryl. Mm-hmm. And this is just going all in on the math of what our deficiencies don't matter if we just bombard you with a shot that's worth 50% more than the shots you're taking. Because it's not.
That's what this is.
That's all this is. But Vinny is absolutely right, which is why I did not sit here and say, I love the trade, it's a home run. Because I do think rim protection matters. I think Clint Capella had some tough moments in the postseason over the last couple years. We all know that. There were a couple moments where you wondered last season, like, really? You just got this new deal and really this is how you're playing? But he is at his best at healthy, and maybe they didn't think they were going to get that, pardon me, again this year. He's a real viable rim defender. They now don't have that. Now, can you bombard a team with threes in a series? Sure. Can the Rockets still, do they still have Harden, who just dropped another 40 last night, nobody cares, Russ coming off his best month as the team with the team? Yes. But all roads go through the Lakers and the Bucks. If you're trying to win a championship, everything goes through those two teams. People talk about the Clippers all they want. The Lakers and the Bucks have been the two best teams in basketball.
So you mean to tell me, playoff series happens. Clippers, Rockets. You're taking Rockets?
I said before the year and right now, absolutely yes. Let's say I'm wrong.
We don't have to say you're wrong.
The point that I'm making is the two best teams in basketball both have dominant giant people. Mm-hmm. Anthony Davis and Giannis. And LeBron, who plays like a giant even if he's not a seven-footer. How are you going to offset that if your biggest guy on the court is 6'6"? I don't know.
Well,
Now, I think the Rockets would tell you, in the critical moments against those teams, we were playing this lineup that we're going to be playing now anyway, that in our biggest spots. But your point that to play it in your biggest spots as opposed to the whole game, it's a big difference.
And here's the other part of it. Mike D'Antoni does not play, he doesn't have a long bench. So you're playing these guys long stretches of minutes, and you're telling me that you're going to get through four rounds of playoffs, three rounds of playoffs, let alone two rounds of playoffs. I can't see them getting past Rudy Gobert in Utah because size matters, especially in the postseason, where we all know what everybody's doing and it comes down to execution. And yeah, while Houston can win you a game from the three-point line, they can lose you another two when they miss 27 in a row and you have no contingency plan on stopping the other team or even having another offensive strategy to manufacture points.
Well, the 27 in a row has happened one time in NBA history. Unfortunately for them, it happened in the biggest game the franchise has played in a quarter century. It was imperfect timing for them in that regard, but that's an anomaly. I think Daryl would tell you, and I haven't talked to Daryl. This trade happened overnight. I have not talked to Daryl. You're right. I do consider Daryl a friend, but I can separate that from the commentary here, that if they were to play Utah, if Utah wants to run 30 posts up for Rudy Gobert, Houston will be thrilled about it. I do think there's an element of that if when they play the Lakers, you're going to dump it down to JaVale a bunch of times because he has size advantage, they'll sign up.
But that's not a way you exploit size advantage by doing that.
No, that's exactly what I was about to say, is that The issue is going to be when one of the stars of the league comes flashing down the lane, who is meeting him at the rim. And Draymond, while undersized, Draymond was elite at that. And Draymond's taller than anyone the Rockets are going to be starting, even if it's marginally. And so, yeah, it's a roll of the dice. And it's one that I did not see coming as far as if you trade Capella, it's for Robert Covington. Now, they do have extra cap space. There is still now, what, another 30 hours until the trade deadline thereabouts. Maybe they have another move coming. But right now, this team does appear to have a pretty significant hole at a pretty significant spot.
It strikes me as desperation.
Okay. Well, you thought they were desperate anyway. You thought this was a one-and-done team anyway.
Well, here's the thing. I think people don't... I'll give the Rockets this. Since they've acquired James Harden, they've been a pretty consistent contender, but those things have a shelf life. And sometimes you miss your best chance. Think about the Phoenix Sun teams of the 90s, the Sacramento Kings teams of the previous decade. Sometimes you get that one shot to topple the dynasty, you don't do it, and all of a sudden you're close and you never really get closer again. And I'll say this.
I don't think they're done. I don't think it's impossible they win the title this year or next. But in all likelihood, the smart money, the best chance the Rockets ever had to win a title with this core was up 3-2, about to go up 3-2 on Golden State in 2018, about 8 seconds before Chris Paul pulled his hamstring. We're going to look back and say that's as good as it was, but this is now they're adding more variance to it, maybe because they know they need to shake the snow globe a little bit to have a real chance against the best of the best.
Here, first things first, with Imani Toomer and Eric Mangini talking Cleveland Browns. A season to forget for just about everyone on that team this year, including Odell Beckham, whose first season as a Brown was the worst season in his pro career. But OBJ is turning the proverbial page, says he has a, quote, good feeling about new head coach Kevin Stefanski. Nick, what do you think? You expect Baker and Odell to have a bounce-back season under their new head coach?
Well, it's certainly not going to be worse than it was last year, right? Like, there is, in the stock market, again, to bring up stocks with our stock market expert coach, you're always worried about the dead cat bounce when something hits the floor and then goes up, but it's really just because it's dead and it's going to go back down. So they're at least going to get that, but you would hope it's not a dead cat bounce, that it's a real resurgence to playing up to their talent level. I think Odell will be better because I think the quarterback play will be better, but I want to go to coach because coach, this side of the table during the year had been very critical of Baker Mayfield fairly and was skeptical and less bullish on Baker certainly than I was going into the year. But this side of the table also, I know I've spoke to coach about this and I think I'm speaking for you as well, was impressed by Baker on the show Friday and the way if people didn't watch, he was our final guest of Super Bowl week. And I thought, now I'm a little biased because I like him, I thought he answered every question just the right way. I thought he showed the steps one would need to take if he was going to have a bounce back season, interceptions aside, but from the other unforced errors of the year.
Yeah, I actually like all the things that are happening in Cleveland. I know I'm probably in the minority there, but I think that Paul DePodesta did a good job in hiring Kevin Stefanski. I think Kevin is a really bright coach who's worked his way up, who seems to have not only the proper temperament, but the proper ego, and understands that he doesn't know everything and there's going to be a learning curve. And there's, it seems to be, an alignment and a fusion between ownership, the administration, coaching. So I like that aspect and where they're headed. From that perspective, in terms of the players, it's good to see. It was nice to see Baker say the things that he said and
take
the accountability. And look, that's the reality of the NFL. The NFL humbles everybody at some point, whether it's because of how long you play or who you play against or how you perform. Eventually, the league humbles all of us, and you need to understand that's part of the process. And that humbleness can lead to really great growth. And I'm hoping that's what happens with Baker, because there's plenty of examples of him doing the right thing. There's plenty of examples of him being a good leader. There's plenty of examples of him playing winning football. And I think he can do that again. With Odell, he needs to make a decision as to what he wants to do and how he wants to fit into this mix. And he could be part of something great, and he could change the narrative that he's had to this point. Every year, that's the other great thing about the NFL, is every week and every year you get a chance to for redemption. Mm-hmm. And do you take that chance and do something with it, or do we just start the same movie over again? And ideally, he's moved past that and grown.
Ideally, yeah. But, you know, when you talk about Baker Mayfield, and he was on the show and he talked right, you know, but... You know, when, one of the things that we used to say is talk is cheap, play the game. You know, I think talk is great. It's all makes everything, you know, makes all the fans feel good. But at the end of the day, if he doesn't put it down on the field, it really doesn't matter. I think it's a step in the right direction. Just like you said, Coach, humble. The game is about being humbled and how you deal with being humbled. Because a lot of these guys have never been humbled throughout their entire careers. They go and play in the NFL. It's the first time they face adversity. How do they deal with it? I think Baker Mayfield is unique in that sense where he was a walk-on and things like that. But when I look at Odell Beckham and you talk about the decision that he has to make a decision whether he wants to be a football player and that's going to be his main focus, or is he going to be a celebrity and that's his main focus? Because there's a lot of things about the way he approaches the game. Like, I love him when he's on the field, but when he's off the field, there's something about it that disconnects with me. Maybe I'm just the old crotchety old player that just says play the game and forget about all the social media stuff. Maybe that's a thing of the past, but you know, he's going to have to make a decision to whether he wants to really focus in and grind on being a football player or not.
You make a great point. I'm sorry to interrupt, Jenna. Making a decision, do you want to be a player or do you want to be a social media star? And I had a young player that when I was in New York who was focused on everything but playing, and he wasn't playing very well and he was a high draft pick. And I just said to him, like, look, at this point, you're a bust. So you can go out and you can have your whole media team talk about how great you are and you can go on this cooking show and that talk show. But at the end of the day, you're a bust. So if you want all that stuff to go the way you want it to, then get in the weight room, work hard, play better, play up to your potential, and all that stuff will take care of itself. And I don't begrudge anybody from trying to maximize their economic potential. It's their right. It's what they should do in this window that they have. But you can't lose track of what's the most important thing to that economic potential. And like you said, that's the work that you do on the field.
I would imagine, Nick, your answer is going to be, why can't you do both? And for the great players, they were able to do both. There haven't been a ton of them, but they were able to. But the two guys on the Browns who wanted to do both, Baker Mayfield and OBJ, weren't able to accomplish that this year because in order to be the celebrity, you have to be the main thing first. You have to be the football player first. And for OBJ, he's so talented. He's so good at his craft. And you want to hope that maybe he's, 6 years in now to his career? When is he going to have the season where he stays healthy, he really focuses on being a great, puts good numbers
first
together
3 years of his
and
career.
Elevates the team
first 3
to
years
have
of
success.
His career.
Yes, but he had the other stuff too. It was a lot of stuff that tainted what he did on the field.
Because people allowed it to. Well, yeah. Well, okay. Well, if you know
here's
I am,
a
then
formal football player.
That's great. I can disagree with Imani. Yeah. I can tell Imani. I do think he's the crotchety old man on this. Odell Beckham. He said it. I mean, you can say I know you're going to say this and then be surprised when I say it. Listen. Last year, Baker was the 31st ranked quarterback in football. Mm-hmm. Odell had 1,000 yards. Okay. We want to act like that if Odell wore a different visor, didn't wear a watch, the Browns would have won 11 games, that's fine. I think it's lunacy. Now, I do think what is true is that, to quote a wise man named LeBron James, you got to keep the main thing the main thing. The reason you are a celebrity is because you are a great football player. And the longer you play on bad teams, the longer you don't play in big games, the less your celebrity star actually shines. But last year was not on Odell Beckham Jr. There were 4 games last year Baker played well. 4 games with a passer rating of 92 or above. They were 4-0. The other games, when he's a turnover machine, they're 2-10. Sometimes we spend all this time talking about, use a mixed metaphors for a moment, bulletin board material. You know when we never talked about it? With Frank Clark. You know why? Because his team kept winning. So that narrative, we had to ball up and throw away. Frank Clark said, Derrick Henry ain't gonna do nothing. They stopped him. Said, the Niners were coming for you. They won that game. So we don't blame him for any of that. We are looking at the Browns season, saying it went to hell, and saying, well, Odell did have the visor and the watch. And so now we are working backwards from it. To me, it's nonsense. He is a great player in this league who, even with bad quarterback play, every year of his career has been highly productive. 1 year he hasn't been a 1,000-yard receiver. That was the year he broke his leg 2 weeks in or 3 weeks in. So I just disagree with the narrative of it. I don't think it's a fair narrative. I don't think it's an accurate narrative.
The truth is always somewhere in between. And as much as you want to say it has nothing to do with it, and as much as some people want to say it has everything to do with the failure of the Browns, the truth is somewhere in between. And what we can all recognize is the potential greatness that he has.
That's what I'm saying.
And if he decides to realize that, then yeah. I think that we it will have an incredible effect on the team. It's just a function of, are you going to choose to be the best version of you?
Like, I watch him on film, and I watch his routes. I watch his techniques. I watch the things that make receivers great. He has a lot of ability that makes up for some of his lacking in technique. But pretty soon, you know, he's 6 years in, 10 years in, he's not going to be able to make up with his athletic ability his deficiencies in route running. So all I'm saying is that, you know, the time is running out. You know, father time is undefeated in terms of how it slows down receivers. And I just think that he could be so much better if I think he focused on the game as much as he focused on the other things in his career.
Well, I would just like to see the receiver who's been better over the first 6 years with equivalent quarterback play.
Yeah, but you gotta understand though, like, he has had so many more opportunities than any other receiver in terms of getting the balls thrown at him. There was a couple games early on in his career, he had 20 throws at him. I mean, how does that never happen?
He's the best player on the team, or he was early in his career.
And it's already always everybody else's fault.
It's not always everybody else's fault. Listen, I've told him this. We've talked about this. The interview is last year with the Giants, with Josina and Lil Wayne.
That was a mistake.
It was a mistake. He thought he did. He thought he was doing well by saying, when asked, is Eli the problem? He's like, I lied. I said, I don't know. When I actually knew. You got to lie better. There are certain, and you know you're a target. So, like, the things like, listen, he acted like a doofus at the national championship game. Absolutely. No one can deny that. I get it. But all those things can be true. And it also can have next to zero effect on how good the Browns are. But because the Browns were bad, we work backwards too.
Cowboys quarterback Dak Prescott has been the center of much debate, still unsigned by the Cowboys, with rumors that the team may franchise tag him. And with many wondering if he deserves to be the highest paid quarterback in the league, Fox analyst and Cowboys legend Troy Aikman believes a deal will inevitably get done. Take a listen.
I think that with each month that passes, every couple months that passes, I think the price goes up at least a little bit as other deals get done. So I think the Cowboys, they've said it. I believe they really want him back. I have no reason to think otherwise. I believe Mike McCarthy really wants him back. Dak wants to be there. I think it's inevitable that they're going to reach a deal.
You agree with Troy, Nick? Are the Cowboys better off giving Dak a big deal now or tagging him with the franchise tag?
I once upon a time thought it was inevitable they were going to give him a deal. I didn't think he'd play this year I didn't think he was going to sit out. I thought he was going to get a deal
right before
this year started, because he had made no real money. His fourth round pick. If they're offering him the Wentz deal, 4 for $128 with 100 guaranteed, $32 million a year. How do you say no to that? When you, even if you think, okay, I'm not worth 128, I'm worth 142. Like, are you going to risk $128 million for the spread of $14 million when you've only made a couple million total? But he did it. And the fact that he now has his downside now is the franchise tag, which is going to be, around $30 million guaranteed for a season. I think Dak's going to continue to push the contract back to the Cowboys unless it's a contract that makes him the highest paid player in football. And the Cowboys would be crazy to make Dak Prescott the highest paid player in football. And so the reason that you don't franchise tag a guy is because if he plays well, then you're going to have to pay him top of the market. But if Dak is already demanding top of the market, then You might as well franchise tag him. Now you got to start working on a contingency plan, but you cannot pay Dak Prescott $37 million a year. You just can't do it.
Well, with the franchise tag, there's a risk that you franchise him and then you still have to pay him top of the market. So you've put that money that doesn't go towards a signing bonus, that's just gone. Mm-hmm. Now, the upside of that is you get a year with your new head coach to evaluate whether or not he truly fits his system. And to me, the Cowboys should take that route to see whether or not this marriage makes sense. And for Dak, he should do everything humanly possible to get a long-term deal in case this doesn't make sense. And it makes more sense for both to get a long-term deal done because of the composition of the rest of the team and the flexibility that gives you.
And they're in a win-now mode, and they've spent money elsewhere.
Yeah, I don't think the Cowboys should offer them a long-term deal right now. I think that the franchise tag is the best option for the Cowboys because, you know, if you reward mediocrity, I mean, he had a good season. Their team isn't where they want to be. He isn't the guy that put them over the top. They have a lot of things around Dak right now. You put a lot of quarterbacks in Dak's situation, I think they might even do better than Dak did this year. So I'm thinking, you know, just kick the can down the road a little bit. Maybe it may cost you more, but at least you're not going to be paying a quarterback that you don't actually want.
Well, go ahead, Jenna.
I just feel like we've had this conversation so many times about do the Cowboys actually want him? Because it certainly seems like the people that are going to be paying Dak Prescott, Jerry Jones and Stephen Jones, want him. They've told us as much. They seem to think he's the best quarterback. If they wait longer, doesn't it get more expensive for them?
But
isn't it less expensive signing him before this past season would have started?
Yeah, but not if he won't sign. Like, it would appear you can't get more expensive than he's asking for. Mm-hmm. Because you're right, Jerry and Steven have been adamant he's our guy. Mm-hmm. While the team didn't play well this year, you could argue individually he had the best year he had other than his rookie season when he was sensational and kind of caught the league by storm to degree. No one saw it coming. And he still isn't signed. I saw Jerry pay Zeke top of the market, pay DeMarcus Lawrence top of the market. Yeah. It's not like this is the Spanos family with the Chargers. I think they think Dak should be in the Carson Wentz neighborhood, and Dak thinks he should be in the Patrick Mahomes soon-to-be neighborhood with Aaron Rodgers and Russell Wilson and the Cowboys. I mean, you can go look for a house, fall in love with the house, and then be like, man, I can, as much as I would love to live here, as much as I like it, as much as it's better than the alternative, I can't pay 50% above market for it. And it appears, while the numbers aren't exactly that, that's what's going on with the Cowboys.
Well, with Zeke's deal, though, he held out. So he locked the doors to the house. They couldn't get in. And they had to decide whether they wanted to sit outside or whether they wanted to come in. And they made that choice. And it's a question of whether Dak would do the same thing. Would he take the franchise tag and say, okay, I'm not coming in either. Go see what you can do without me. Now, this all becomes detrimental to the success of
everyone, to
the success of everyone. So it's in everybody's best interest to get to a place that works. And as much as they may love Dak and he's their guy, you still don't want to get taken advantage of in a relationship. And if there's a number that they feel is fair, And they've got to find that place.
Do you think there's another team that would pay Dak as the highest paid there is?
I don't know about highest paid in the league, but I think if Dak were a free agent right now, there are enough desperate teams mm-hmm. who've been in the quarterback wilderness, they would pay him $35 million a year, and those teams would be making a mistake.
Back here with Coach Mangini and Imani Toomer, we're talking Super Bowl champion Kansas City Chiefs. It's got a nice ring to it if you're a Chief or a Chiefs fan, but if you host a morning sports show, the conversation has to be how this team follows up this win. Many expect them to stay on top next season as they have the best odds to win Super Bowl 55. Andy Reid's looking forward to defending the championship, but he knows he's going to have every team's best shot.
Once you've been there and experienced it, you want to go back. And I was lucky enough when I was younger to and coaching at Green Bay that I've went to a couple of these and you know, it's great when you win but there's an urgency that you feel to get back. You got to step back and then relax for a minute, and then it's time to go. And you'll be everybody's best game.
Nick, what do you think will be the biggest challenge for the Chiefs if they are going to repeat?
Well, I actually want to defer to the experts on this one because both these guys have won Super Bowls. Both these guys know what it's like to have to try to repeat. Coach actually did repeat. And by the way, that's the last team to do it. I was going backwards in my head. Seattle almost did it. New England post 03-04 won 3 out of 5, but it was they won in 14, they won in 16, they won in 18. They didn't repeat. Like, we haven't had, the Broncos obviously did it, the Cowboys did it in the 90s, but it's seemingly easier to win a couple Super Bowls, far easier than to win a couple Super Bowls in a row. So, Coach, your guys, before you won back-to-back, you won a Super Bowl and then missed the playoffs the next year with mostly the same roster. So, for you guys, what was the hardest part of it?
Yeah, so we finished 9-7 that year. The Dolphins finished 9-7, and the Jets finished 9-7, and the Jets had the tiebreaker, so they went to the playoffs. And this is a team that we beat, I think, like 44-12 early in the season. And we started off the season really well, but we didn't truly understand what it takes and how much success affects the locker room, how much it affects expectations. And there were times that we thought we would show up and we would win because we showed up. Where every other team is benchmarking themselves against you, you're getting their best effort, you're getting their best effort in the preseason, you're getting their best effort in every single situation. And it's a long season and that can be exhausting. It's a much shorter off season because you've gone that much further. So that means everything is compressed and guys want credit. Guys want new contracts. Guys want endorsements. Guys want, everybody feels like they deserve a piece of the
glory,
the riches, however you want to. And instead of taking a step back and saying, okay, this is great. But now we've got to reload and we've got to retool and we've got to forget about last year and move on. And Andy makes an interesting point. He says, defend a championship. I always thought Bill Belichick had a good term. And he said, we're not defending a championship. No one can take that away from us. We're starting over trying to win another championship. And I thought that was the right perspective.
Yeah, your point is 100% true. I remember in 08, after we won the Super Bowl, we went into Cleveland and played the Cleveland Browns on Monday night. They were 0-2, and 0-2, and we were 2-0. So we thought we'd show up, roll out the footballs, like you said, and we'd beat them. They absolutely put on a spectacular show. They beat us. I can't remember the score, but it was decisively.
Is that in 09?
Yeah, 08. 08, 08.
Oh, no, 08.
It was decisively. So it was an eye-opener. We ended up rattling off a couple games in a row after that. But knowing that, you can hear about being on everybody's bulletin board. You can hear about it. But then when you actually feel it, when teams that are non-competitive versus everybody else go against you and they look like they're world beaters, it's definitely an adjustment period.
And it's exhausting. And
it is, because every week it's consistent.
Yep.
But you guys, to me, your guys' 08 season was a little more similar to Coach's 04 season. You guys won in 03 and then you repeated in 04. And in fact, you guys had an unbelievable winning streak if you were to combine the 2 years, right?
I can't remember, 25
straight. 25 straight, yeah, he doesn't remember. And so, because you guys in 08, I thought were a better team than in 07.
We were.
I mean, listen, you guys started 10-1, I think. There's some close to it. Do I have it right?
We were 11-1.
11-1, and I hate to bring it, Plex shot himself, and the whole thing went to hell. Mm-hmm. And so the Cleveland game notwithstanding, what do you think prior to an anomaly of what happened with Plex, what do you think led to you guys playing so well the first few months of the season, similar to what you guys were able to do in 04 with the experience of it?
I think you're riding that high still. You're still excited. You still love the fact that when you go and you get announced you're the world champs, you love all the thing that's connected with the Super Bowl. But as the season wears on, you're like, man, when are the playoffs coming? And you just get worn out. Those extra games you played the year before start wearing on you. And there's no substitute for genuine thrill and excitement. We've already been there. We've done that. And these teams that are coming up, we played the Eagles that knocked us out of the playoffs. They hadn't been to the playoffs in a while. They were so genuinely happy just to be in the playoffs, obviously more happy than we were. And more excited, and they beat us at home to end 08 season.
So if you're Andy Reid, what are you saying to the guys now? Because it's one thing to say, hey, don't worry, this is a fresh season. We're going to start fresh. Make sure you don't carry last year. Yeah. But just like what happened with you and just like what happened to you guys, it infiltrates that locker room. So if you're Andy Reid, how do you make sure that you are starting from scratch the start of next season?
Well, look, to some degree, this is new ground for Andy, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's going to go through a learning curve because he hasn't been in the situation. It's difficult. Most of the league's been off, what, over a month?
Yes.
So they've had all that time to rest and relax, and they're actually thinking about the off-season program and lifting, and they're getting in the routine. These guys are just finishing up, and then there's all the things that come with it. There's the banquet tour and the speaking engagements and the TV and all those things are coming with it, and they need time to reload. Mm-hmm. So by the time they start thinking about football again, everybody else has had this huge head start, including coaching staffs, evaluating their team, evaluating other teams. There's a ton of catch-up work to do, and people don't realize it. They don't get their head around it.
I think the team they can look to is the Seahawks. And I know the Seahawks didn't repeat, but they came as close as you possibly can. They were a yard away from doing it. And I know people looked at them as, despite Russ being defensive-oriented team, they came back the next year with that entire same core of their defense, and they said, we're just going to build on it. I know you got to start fresh.
Well, the other thing that has to happen is you got to be a little lucky, too.
Well, that's exactly what I was going to say.
Injuries can change things dramatically.
And that Seahawks team that we always talk about that was a yard away, yeah, they were a yard away from beating the Patriots. They were an onside kick away from losing to the Packers in the conference championship game the round before, but they had no Super Bowl hangover. Mm-hmm. They were just as good, if not better, the following season en route to the Super Bowl. That was a coach that didn't have the experience, a young quarterback, but you had the strength of your team fully intact, ready to go again next year. The Chiefs will have their offense, Sammy Watkins notwithstanding, fully intact, ready to go next season, one with them.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern.